Tony.
Hello, Canada. Today's date is May 5th, 2024. Welcome to a full edition of Canadian Common Sense, Canada's Issues, in about an hour. It is Tony in Saskatchewan.
And Lewis out here in BC, and it is the day after heartbreak for Toronto.
Yeah, and you know, actually, my wife and I went out for supper last night at our local Canadian brew house. I'm sure many of you have them in your cities or across the country. If you don't, they're a great sports lounge. They have almost every TV in the joint was on the hockey game. And of course we couldn't hear each other talk. So I was just watching the hockey game behind my wife and she was watching UFC behind me. So, I guess a great romantic supper, but, we watched the second period at the brew house, and that was an amazing period of hockey. But yeah, I discovered that the Leafs came up short. What a surprise.
Though, you know, I mean, I got to say, it would have been probably the greatest comeback in Leafs history had they won last night. And
that's true.
And I mean, for about 2 minutes, it looked like they were going to win. In the third period there when they scored, and then Boston tied it up. But going into overtime, I was like, man, they actually have a shot at this. Like they could, because I mean it was a great game. They could have come out of there with the win and solidifying the greatest comeback in Leafs history, because they were down 3-1 and in the series. And but alas, it was not to be.
They realized late in the third period that, oh yeah, we're the Maple Leafs.
we're not supposed to win.
Yeah.
we're just supposed to disappoint our fans like we do every year. And trust me, I can ridicule Toronto fans because, you know, I did grow up in BC and as a Canucks fan. So they did the same thing to us. But there is something I wanted to correct that I said last week, where I said that the Toronto Maple Leafs have never won three rounds of hockey, of playoff hockey. They actually have. It was in 1931.
Oh, well, not that long ago.
No. 1931 was when the Leafs won three rounds of playoff hockey to win the Stanley Cup. After that, though, in 1932, it went down to six teams and two rounds of playoff hockey to win the Cup. So every Cup after 1931, the Leafs won, was only two rounds. And since, you know, 1967 was the last time they won a cup, they have not won three rounds of hockey in 94 years.
Wow. Well then.
Yeah.
So it's been a while. I mean, yes, they've made it to the third round before, like 1993, for example, but they just couldn't pull it off.
No.
And to be fair, I was actually hoping the Leafs would win last night, but I was not surprised that they did not. So,
yeah, I wasn't. although, but now, I mean, there's only two Canadian teams left, and it's guaranteed that only one Canadian team will be left after this round. But which one will it be? Vancouver or Edmonton? And I know Canucks fans are trying to make a big deal about the fact that they swept the Oilers in the regular season this year, but three of those wins came in the dark period of the Oilers season, which was the first like 15 games or first 20 games where they only won two games. And then the last win there came when the Oilers had didn't have McDavid and a couple of the other stars on the roster for the game because it was right late in the season and they were resting them for the playoffs. So, yeah, the Canucks have not seen the Oilers that played in the first round of this playoff series or playoff hockey this year. They did not see the Oilers in the when they were playing their best hockey during the regular season either. So, yeah, Vancouver, you might be in for a bit of a surprise here.
Yeah, and we'll wrap the show up talking about hockey because that first round was actually pretty great for the league. So
Yeah.
most important housekeeping note, and we've got a few of them, but well, this past week saw you, Lewis, complete another trip around the sun. So happy birthday to you. I guess I can't say old man because I'm older than you, but you've made it one more trip.
Yeah, thank you. That was yesterday. Yeah. My sister texted me and wished me a happy birthday and said that she thought that she was only 42 and but then did the math and realized that if I'm 47, then she's 44. And I said, well, that's all right. My wife asked me how it felt to be 47, and I said, well, considering I thought I was 48, I'm feeling pretty good now.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. You've aged yourself younger. So
Yeah, I did. And I figured out why that happened. And it was because like at the beginning of the year, when the calendar clicked over to 2024, I just kind of had it in my head that since I was born in 77, that 24 minus
yeah, there you go.
2024 minus 1977, that's 47 or 47. So I was calling myself 47 years old since January. So when my birthday hit, I was like, yeah, I'm 48. Nope, I am not 48. I am 47.
Well, good that the math worked out.
Yeah, I got an extra 5 months.
Yep. All right. So further into housekeeping here, Lewis, maybe you're starting something here. Listener Jason said, you know what? I'm going to join Lewis in the Canada Parks Challenge. So next time he goes to see his doctor, he's going to ask for a Parks Canada pass for his mental health. So,
Well, yeah, I got one.
oh, you did.
I did. Yep,
Excellent.
I saw my doctor this week. Yeah, and I asked for it and I got it.
So what do you have to do?
I don't know.
Oh, see,
I
so he's
haven't
get.
looked into it that far.
Oh, but you have the prescription at least.
I do. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay.
Yep.
Because I did see a link there that just said there were certain things you had to fill out in order to get the pass, but I never dug into it either because I'm just.
Yeah. I'm not going to, just because it's I think it's kind of a waste of time and a waste of resources to do this. So I just wanted to see how easy it would be to get it from the doctor. It was fairly easy.
Nice.
But I do think that I haven't, like I said, I haven't looked into what I have to do to get the to actually get the pass because I'm not gonna do it. Because the national parks are they're actually, far enough away from me that I probably won't even go there this year. So, but yeah, it wasn't that hard.
Okay. See that's actually why I won't go for it too, but on a friend's Facebook post, I should point out, by the way, for some reason we were actually the first show that brought this to light, and then after our show all this past week, other outlets have been highlighting this, and I'm seeing it all over X now, and so I was like, well, I guess you're welcome, folks. I didn't realize it was going to be such a big news item this week, but turned into one.
Well, yeah. Well, it just shows what kind of influence this show has.
Apparently, yeah. Who
Yeah.
who'd have
Not
thought?
me. Not
No.
me.
So anyway, some friends of mine were commenting on Facebook, and I just made a glib comment that, well, if I ever get up to a national park, I'm just going to tell the person at the gate that I identify as a newcomer, and They have no right to deny my identity. In fact, they are obligated to support my choice of identifying as a newcomer to Canada, and they're gonna have to let me in.
Yeah.
Problem solved.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. So, listener Jackie out in Ontario actually sent a note in just to say that, at least in the city of Barrie, she went to the public library, and you can actually borrow a park pass for provincial parks from her from the public library.
Really?
Yeah, so she actually took the kids to Wasaga Beach, as a, well, I guess as a free takeout from the library. So another good way to keep some dollars in your own pocket, I guess. So thanks for that, Jackie. So if you want to go to the provincial parks in Ontario, maybe see if you can check out a day pass at the library. Great idea.
Yeah, I bet you guys didn't even know you had libraries.
Yeah, they're not as popular as they used to be. You're right.
No, they're a dime breed.
Yeah. So, want to go through some of our Spotify polls. I haven't been as good keeping up on those as we should have been the last few shows. A very interesting one on show episode 278. The question was, should we force the CPP to invest in Canadian markets? I was stunned.
The correct answer is no.
Yes, but well, we thought the correct answer was no. Polling says 54% of you said yes, they should invest in, yes, we should force the CPP to invest in Canadian markets. 46% said no. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, I have to say I'm a little disappointed because but then I thought, our listeners probably answered that poll before they listened to our arguments against it. And so I would be interested in knowing from some of the people who voted yes, did their mind change after listening to the show? Because, like I said, the correct answer is no. Because you can't like the CPP is not supposed to be a bank, right? It's not supposed to be a loan guarantee for Canadian businesses or a or not necessarily a loan guarantee, but a source of investment
Right.
for specifically Canadian businesses. It is supposed to be a retirement fund, which means you invest in the businesses that are going to give you the highest return, because that's the main concern. Your main concern with a pension plan is to make sure there's money there for people when they retire, not to ensure that Canadian businesses have a source of investment. Because I'm sorry, but if your Canadian business is not viable, that foreign investors want to, or any investors want to invest in your business, then our pension plan shouldn't be investing in it either.
No, exactly. And one sad thing I learned about the pension plan after we did the show is the federal government actually uses that the assets within the plan as their own assets. So when they calculate their own credit rating, that is counted as a government asset. And I thought, no, that's not your money. That is, it's Canadians' money, but yeah, for some reason, when they calculate the credit rating, that's considered a government asset to weigh against the debt.
Oh, that's wrong.
It's totally wrong.
That should not be taken into that should not be counted as an asset. No way, because it's not their money.
No, they shouldn't even be on the books.
No, that is actually Canadian money, that Canadian citizens' money. That's not government money. Because I mean, by saying that, then they could just use it for whatever they want.
Yeah.
Like they could actually just raid the fund. I mean, they did that with EI, right? I mean, you remember Jean Chrétien and Paul Martin did that to balance the budget. They raided the EI fund of like to the tune of $50 billion or something to balance the budget back in the 90s.
I remember that
And
well.
Yeah, and so that was wrong too. They shouldn't have been able to do that either. But the CPP is definitely not government funds.
No, which leads us right into the polling for the next episode, 279. Is the government being responsible with our finances? Thankfully, 100% of respondents said no.
Oh, you guys redeemed yourselves. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, and honestly, I think you're right that maybe people, when they first click on the episode, probably do answer the polling question before they even listen. Because I do that, so I'm guilty. So we'll go to
Yeah,
episode.
I'm not.
Oh, okay. Well, good for you that you'd go,
I'm
you're
not guilty.
conscientious enough to go back to that. That's good. So, in episode 280 last weekend's show, should Pierre Poilievre be more mainstream to appeal to voters? 15% of you actually said yes, he should, and 85% of you said no, he should keep doing what he's doing. I'm in that camp. He should just keep on keeping on. His the advice he gets, quote unquote, from the all the media pundits, he should just completely ignore that.
Well, I mean, we talked about this in the last episode, and the fact that his polling is as high as it is with him, putting out that persona that he's got, just says that that's what he should continue doing. I mean, why mess with something that's working? It's the old adage of don't fix what ain't broke. And
Right.
if the polling numbers are not going down and they're going up, or they're staying right where they need to be, then why would you change it? Why would you try to fix something that isn't broken? I mean, it's funny because the political pundits' advice to conservative leaders is always the same thing, and it's always act more like a liberal.
Yeah.
Say more liberal things. Don't be a conservative if you want to get elected in this country. And for the most part, they're right. I mean, if you want to be elected in this country, you don't say conservative things. You don't act like a conservative, because Canada is very much a left-wing country. But people are so sick of the situation our country's in. And they are tired of where the Liberal Party has gone, because the Liberal Party is more left-wing than the NDP now. They're looking for some common sense, and they think they've found it in Pierre Poilievre. So why would he change something? Why would he act more like a liberal? I mean, it's garbage. Maybe these political pundits are just showing why, nobody listens to them anymore, and they listen to people like us.
Yeah, well, that's true. And we're glad to have you. All right. We said we would talk about this one more time and one more time only on the show because it's one of those topics we were so tired of talking about for almost 6 years. Because that was the, yeah, I'm pretty sure we started talking about this early on in the days of our show. The Trans Mountain expansion or Trans Mountain pipeline expansion is officially done, it is officially pumping oil. And so this all the way from Bruderheim, Alberta to Burnaby, BC, bringing that oil from Fort McMurray to the Bruderheim transfer. And it's now filling tankers up to the tune of, I believe it's one a day now, where it used to be one a week, if I'm not mistaken. But at any
Wow.
rate, yeah, it's expected to, they say it's it, they're expecting now that will narrow the gap in the price of the Western Canadian Select crude to bring it more in line with the world markets because now we're actually able to start sending oil off to Asia consistently and well in a greater volume. So finally, the government got something right, even though they weren't completely involved.
Well, they got something right only because they got everything wrong before they got it right. I mean, with that pipeline was going to be built at zero cost to the taxpayer,
Yep.
and they scared They scared, the company away, because with all these regulations and everything, they scared them away. And the company went, nope, we're just not even going to build it because you guys are being such pains in the, you know what?
Yep.
And the government went, well, sell us the pipeline and we'll get it built. So they sold them the pipeline for $8 billion when it was valued at $4 billion, and then proceeded to build a $40 billion expansion when I can't even remember what the projected cost or the estimate to have it built was, but I think it was less than 10 billion. And it cost $40 billion to build it. Like, it would never have cost that much had the original owner been allowed to complete the construction.
Yep, exactly. And they tried to stop it every way they could, whether it was the hummingbird nest or the sacred trees and every other obstacle that they had to delay the process. But yes, it's finally done. It's pumping oil and it's going to be great for Canada. They were making 500 million a year, I think, for the government on it. And now that revenue is going to, at the very least, triple, if not more. So they did increase the toll price for the oil companies to pump through it to help recoup some of their costs. But still, with the now heightened price they're going to get for it, it's nothing but good news. So I'm loath to say congratulations that they finally got it done, but I'm thrilled. It's finally done and we can finally stop talking about it.
Yeah. So that's it. I'm done.
Absolutely. So let's move on to, well, the city of Cornwall, Ontario, right close to the Quebec border. Listener Ashley had sent in a picture of her local walk-in clinic. Lewis, exactly the same story you were telling with your walk-in clinic there in the Okanagan. She wanted to go to the clinic, which opened at, I'll say 8 o'clock just for the sake of putting a number to it. And she said, if you're not there at 6 a.m. to get in line, to get in when as soon as the clinic opens, you are unlikely to get an appointment that day. And if you're lucky enough to get up to the desk, then you'll be told, yep, come back at 3, 4, whatever time it is for your appointment. She wasn't so lucky, so she ended up having to go to the ER just to get a doctor's note because she was too sick to go to work. So now you're sitting in ER all bloody day just to get a doctor's note.
Yeah, which
So
is
it,
like the worst thing for you. You should be home in bed,
right.
right? Like, you should be home in bed drinking fluids, getting sleep, right? That's the best thing for you in that situation. But instead, you're sitting in a waiting room with dozens of other sick people that could probably make you worse. I mean, you're not getting any sleep, so you're just sitting there like a zombie. And yeah, it sucks. And it's not the way the medical system is supposed to be working. It's not working. And I mean the whole requirement for a doctor's note, I mean, like, I know that that's required if, like, it, like, here in BC, if you're missing more than 3 days in a row of work. But I don't know what the rules in Ontario are for that. If you have to have one for one day, I mean, that's ridiculous too. But yeah, I mean, that's just, it's crazy. Crazy that you got to wait at the ER pretty much all day, just to get a note.
Yeah, and she had said, yeah, she was there, I think, 8 hours or something. Now,
Oh, God.
yeah, and it's ridiculous. And she had sent us a picture of the at the front door of the walk-in clinic, which says right on there, we are not accepting new patients, or we're not accepting patients. Well, I'll put it up on our Facebook page, but I thought, okay, so you're a walk-in clinic, not accepting patients, and basically within the first half hour they're open, they filled their appointments for the day. Like,
Yeah.
and that was exactly what you had said with your local clinic as well. I mean,
Yep.
the emergency rooms are not meant to be our walk-in clinics, but that's what's happening.
Yeah. No, emergency rooms are supposed to be used for emergencies. But
Yeah.
you can't get in to see your family doctor for 2 or 3 weeks. You can't get into the walk-in clinics. So what's your options? Your option is to go use the ER like a doctor's clinic.
Yep.
And it sucks because that's not what it's there for.
No, exactly. Now, to be fair, I also don't know what the rules in Ontario are as far as if it's 3 days, 1 day, whatever that you're away. The government apparently is reviewing that policy, so I'm not sure how much longer that's going to be in place that you need a doctor's note in Ontario. I know we don't need them here. We used to,
Well,
but
if a government says that it's under review, they're going to be waiting for three different reports that are going to be written, and they're going to be 1,000 pages each, and all. I mean, it's ridiculous, right? I mean, like, just use some common sense. Just look at it and go, is that a good policy, or is that a stupid policy? And if it's a stupid policy, then just get rid of it. You don't need a review. You don't need a report written on it. You don't need, input from 18 different experts and all of that. I mean, just look at it and go, is this a stupid policy? If your answer is yes, then just eliminate it.
yep, hey, I'm all for that. All right, so we'll stick in Ontario. There was a couple by-elections recently, one in Milton and one, I can't remember the name of the other riding, but it was in southwestern Ontario. And at any rate, we were looking at the one in Milton because it was a former Liberal, Zee Hamid, or Hamid, who had switched colors to run for the Progressive Conservatives. And Bonnie Crombie was thinking that she might run in that by-election, Bonnie Crombie being the relatively newly elected Ontario Liberal leader. Well, Bonnie Crombie decided not to run, and well, voters of Milton said, we're going with Team Blue. So the Conservatives held that seat. So Zee Hamid, Liberal turned Progressive Conservative, is now into House and in the other riding further to the west, something Middlesex, something. The Conservatives ran away with that one, 58% of the vote. So safe seat there, and they kept it blue. So I guess people aren't that mad at Doug Ford yet.
Yeah.
All right, and the last housekeeping note I want to touch on is housing. We talked about this a few different times, and Justin Trudeau's plan to build 3.9 million homes by 2031 means that they'd have to build one home per minute is what the numbers turned out to. The current pace of housing, and this plan, by the way, is to supplement the current housing construction rates. Currently, the numbers I'm seeing that there are anywhere between 214,000 to about 219,000 new builds that are supposed to begin or supposed to be completed this year. So I thought I'd cut that in the middle and go with 217,000 because it makes for easier math. So 217,000 houses to be built, their homes, I should say, to be built. That turns into 24 a day, one per hour. So if we're currently building one home per hour, somehow Justin Trudeau and his wizards in the federal government believe we can ramp that up 60-fold to build one home per minute. So let that sink in and ask yourself how that's ever going to work.
Yeah, he's out of his mind.
Yeah, and actually, Roy Green had a home builder from Calgary on, and they were talking about that, and he had just said that it's not even. He said, A, they don't have the labor to get that kind of stuff done, but he said, B, it's not even as much the problem of having the labor. He says you've got to have the municipalities involved to get the infrastructure in there to say, yes, you can use this neighborhood and we will pipe in the water and sewer, electricity, natural gas, etc., for you to get those homes built. And he said that's as big a roadblock as anything else. So good luck. I mean, I'm sorry for those of you who are hoping for that 1 minute home to be built for you, but yeah, I mean, we talked about that tiny home community in New Brunswick where they were putting one tiny home together per week, and that is actually really quick. So it's just I think they literally just said, 3.9 million sounds like a really big number. especially if we say 3.9 million homes. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just in a country the size of Canada, it's I just don't see it being possible to build that many homes in that short of time.
No, and that's it's sad, and I feel awful for people who want to get into the housing market and can't. There's those stories. I mean, and listener Trevor had alluded to that a few weeks ago as well. People who are just getting out of the big city and moving to smaller communities. That's one way to go. I read a story about this fellow, and I think he came from Ontario, but at any rate, he moved out to to a small town in the absolute middle of nowhere in the prairies. And he bought himself a $50,000 house, obviously paid cash for it. And he says, yeah, I moved where I'm, I think, half hour to 45 minutes away from a larger center where he would go do his grocery shopping, etc. He said, but I'm living the best life. I'm working remotely, so I don't actually drive much until I need to go get groceries, etc. So his once a week drive into that larger center, yeah, maybe it's going to cost you an extra 100, 150 bucks a month for the gas, but literally everything else costs you less. And well, you've got a home that you paid 50 grand for, and well, you've got a pretty damn good quality of life. So it's I think if more people thought like that guy, I'm not saying it would solve the housing crisis, but it would certainly bring down the demand in the larger centers.
Yeah, it certainly helped. Yeah.
Yeah, so it is a different lifestyle. And I know to meet a guy who moved from southwestern Ontario down into southeast Saskatchewan, same kind of deal, just wanted to move somewhere so he could have a cheaper place, raise a family. And yeah, he loves it down there. He said he's got a nice big chunk of land, and he's actually got some animals on it now, and yeah, living the life. So, all right, so now we can get to the show topics for the day. And we've got a, oh, sorry, Lucy, you have one more point. My bad.
Yeah, we do have one more housekeeping issue, and it has to do with the foreign interference report.
Yes, indeed, we do. Good catch. The interim report was published on Friday, I believe it was, into foreign interference. I haven't had a chance to read through it yet. I'm actually going to do some of that later on today after the show. Justice Hogue did say that. Oh, hope you're all sitting down, Canada. Yes, indeed, there was foreign interference in Canada's elections in 2019 and 2021 from China. And wow, I mean,
What?
who would have seen that coming? So apparently, British Columbia Senator Yuen Pao Wu, yes, he does have a Chinese sounding name, appointed by the Liberals. He actually says that any federal government employees who were whistleblowers, who leaked any information, should all be named and they should be prosecuted. Well, what does he
Huh.
have to hide?
Wow. Yeah. I mean,
Yeah.
there's a reason you need to protect whistleblowers. When the government is involved in something illegal, you need people who are willing to stand up and say, "Hey, this is wrong, and this is what's happening." And I mean, you've seen it in the States. Every whistleblower down there has been, run out of the country, like Ed Snowden. To being prosecuted or being suicided.
Yeah.
I mean, look at anybody who's ever said anything about having something on the Clintons. I mean, they seem to die in very mysterious ways.
Yeah, exactly. So,
Yeah.
Lewis is not suicidal, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not gonna kill myself. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So now we'll get into the show topics. So on the show today, Wacko Singh for his pension. Calgary said what? BC's pilot project and more. Where do you want to start, sir?
Oh, you know what? Normally I would say let's start with crazy BC, but I'm going to say let's start with Jagmeet Singh.
Yeah, Jagmeet Singh, Well, we got to talk about the interview he did with Vashi Kapelos after announcing he was going to support the budget. So let's start there, because okay, I owe Vashi Kapelos an apology for his talk for me harping on her for being a little soft on some politicians. I admit she has zero patience for Chrystia Freeland, and she is very, quick to tell her, "You're not answering my question." She took absolutely no crap from Jagmeet Singh. I loved it.
Yeah, it was almost like she's just kind of had it up to here with politicians, BS, because at one point he said that Justin Trudeau, that the budget or yeah, the budget from Justin Trudeau proves that he is completely out of touch. And she interjected and said, "Doesn't this just prove that you are too?"
Yes, she did.
And I was just like, oh my God, I love you so much. Like she just would not let him get away with it. I mean, every single thing he said, she just went for the jugular on, because I mean, he was trying to say how he, like, she even said, you are, well known for saying that Justin Trudeau is a failed leader, is terrible for Canada, is, all these things." She listed off all these things that he says about him on a regular basis, and then says, "But you're going to support them." And is that simply because you can't afford to run an election or something like that? I think she asked him that at one point.
She did, yeah, because she talked about the fundraising numbers.
Yeah, and that they've only managed to fundraise like $6.5 million, and the Conservatives have raised like almost 40 million. And she said, "Isn't it just because you can't afford to have an election?" Like, and the only thing she didn't say to him that I wish she had was, "Are you just holding on until you get your pension before you bring this government down?" Because she's like, "You have all the power. You have all the power to bring this government down, and you refuse to." And she says, "This just makes you a hypocrite." Like, it was beautiful. Like, and every single thing he said, she countered. Like, it was amazing.
She was good, and he had brought up on during that interview too that because she had asked him, okay, well, you had said that the support for people with disabilities was insufficient because it was only $200 and they wanted it to be up to a poverty level, or perhaps it was a livable wage. Can't remember where he wanted it, but he wanted significantly more support for disabled Canadians, and he wanted more for pharmacare. And by the way, 1.8 million for pharmacare, that's not going to do anything in the budget, just so you know. It's
Yeah,
going
no,
to be
that's
15 billion to set it up. So
yeah, basically 1.8 million is nothing.
yeah,
Yeah.
so oh, I'm sorry, 1.8 billion, not million.
Million.
Yeah,
Yeah.
so
And
but anyway,
how many billions to set it up? 15?
15 billion dollars.
Yeah.
So anyway, so she'd asked him that. She just said, okay, so you had said that there wasn't enough for disabilities, there wasn't enough for pharmacare, you wanted expanded dental care, so why didn't you why are you still supporting the budget? And Jagmeet Singh said, oh, I talked to the Prime Minister and he's expressed an openness
Yeah.
to these issues. And she said, okay, so just an openness is enough to win your support? Like, why wouldn't you get something concrete? And
Yeah.
Jagmeet just again said, well, he's shown an openness to discussing this. It's like,
Yeah.
you're the worst negotiator in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we've said this on the show before, how, it's like the rest of the media, even Vashi, it's as if Vashi has just figured out now that Jagmeet Singh's negotiating tactics are the worst. Like, he sucks at negotiating, because we have been saying on this show for years that whenever he wants to get something out of the government, all they have to do is promise him that they'll consider it. And that's enough for him. And he'll support whatever they want him to support as long as they promise to consider it. And it's like Vashi has just finally figured it out that that's all that it takes. We figured this out a couple of years back, right? But yeah, and she said, "Is that all it takes to get your support? Is a promise of openness?" And it's like, what does that even mean? Like, that's his favorite word. Like, he kept repeating this openness word, and he said it like multiple times. And I was like, what is that? Like, this is a buzzword. Like, you guys, this is a buzzword that you're trying to get into the lexicon. Like, what openness? Like, what the hell does that even mean? Like, it doesn't mean anything, you know? And so they, there's an openness to increasing these programs. And, you know, it's the NDP that have forced them to do this. You know, it was against their will. They forced them to do this. And so the NDP's winning.
Yeah, that's why he's going to hang on, because he wants to force them to do more. It's like, oh my God. It's like when it's like Jagmeet Singh is like, he walks into a room and says, okay, I'm going to go in and talk to the prime minister. I'm going to say, I need to have this. I need to have this. And then just turns around and walks out before he gets an answer. And then goes and tells the media, yep, this is what I told him. And what did they say to you? Well, I don't know.
He expressed an openness. But yeah, no, it's all it takes to get, and then his favorite line was that Pierre Poilievre is just going to take it all away from you.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Oh, of course. And I don't think he said it in that interview with Vashi. No, in fact, I know he didn't. I know he said he was he still planned on being there for the next election. Maybe he did say it with her. Anyway, I remember he had also said recently that after the next election, he is going to be prime minister.
I saw that.
So was it in that interview or was it in a
No,
different
it's a
one?
different one.
Okay, so I
Yeah, I
just
did see
thought,
that though.
yeah, I just thought, I don't know if he actually believes his own BS or if he's just got to say that because every federal leader is technically running to be prime minister. But I thought, I'm not sure you're going to win your own seat in the next election.
There is no way in hell he believes that. If he believes that, he is not fit to run for office, because that it just proves how delusional he is.
Oh, yeah, that delusional is the best word for it. So then after he said that, I just thought to myself, okay, the majority of Canadians want an election. I mean, that polling says it's like over 70% of Canadians want an election now. So I thought, okay, if you actually think you're going to be a prime minister after the next election, then why not make that election happen? Pull the trigger, vote against the budget.
No, good point. I mean, he obviously doesn't believe it, right? I mean, I saw this meme after the Vashi interview with him, and he says, and it says, "Never trust a socialist who wears a $15,000 Rolex watch."
Yeah, well, I mean, there's that, and there's his BMW sports car, and his
Well,
wife,
it was bespoke suits. I mean, those suits are $10,000. I mean, that he wears, like, they're all custom tailored suits.
and his wife, the Instagram influencer or whatever social media outlet she's on, getting that $1,700 recliner chair to show off.
Oh that's right. She was getting stuff for free to promote it on her Instagram, and it wasn't. And I don't believe they were claiming it.
Jagmeet, you've got nothing but credibility over in this front. Not. All right, so let's talk a bit more about the budget here. There's a couple things that did raise an eyebrow. The capital gains tax increase got taken out of the budget bill and is getting voted on as a separate bill unto itself. So that kind of takes the wind out of my sales, thinking that that would be a good reason to vote against the budget because, well, perhaps Justin Trudeau heard what I said and said, oh, yeah, we should probably take that out so that it doesn't bring the government down, because now the rest of the party can say, oh, yeah, well, you know, that capital gains was contentious, but we'll vote on that separately so we can just blanket our support for the budget. So I'm definitely less bullish on a spring election. Hopeful, yes, but that does really deflate my tires.
Yeah. I mean, as soon as they announced that they were going to separate that out, I knew that the election was definitely not happening now. It does not, yeah, it doesn't look good. Like and this is something that Justin Trudeau, I mean, if he looks at the polls, like there is no way he can call an election right now. He's going to get absolutely decimated. But you know, he's a pretty stupid guy, so I thought maybe, you know, maybe he would do the stupid thing. But yeah, no, it's unfortunate that they decided to that they're going to be separating that out, because now it really leaves no contentious issue for, say, the NDP to not support it, or the or liberal backbenchers to not support it, like to not show up for the vote, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was what I was hoping.
So yeah, and I mean that issue has become quite contentious across the country. Although a bunch of online polling I've seen all show Canadians have a general support for increasing the capital gains tax, which I just do not understand. I don't
Yeah.
think people understand how it affects them. I mean, because it does. It affects it affects you if you are a small business owner. It affects you if you are, like we've talked about, a doctor who is a family practitioner because they have their family practice, right? That's a small business. It affects anybody who owns their own trades company. It affects you know, it affects you if you own an asset. Like
Exactly.
if you own a second home or another property of any kind, like it affects you. I mean,
Yep.
it's a basically a, what was it? It was basically a 33% increase in the capital gains tax on these things. So this is not, this will affect people's pensions. It will, you know, I don't understand what it is about Canadians and people in general who decide that, you know, taxes should go up on the wealthy people. Well, guess what? Your pension plan is considered one of those wealthy people. Like it's a wealthy pension plan. So your pension plan is going to be getting hit with higher taxes. Like it's only hurts you. Like I don't understand how people can just blindly support increased taxes, just because a government says that it's only going to affect rich people. I think it's been demonstrated quite clearly now that it's not going to affect just rich people. It's going to affect a lot of people. I mean, tax increases never just affect one group of people. It affects most people, if not all people.
Exactly. Yeah. So without the capital gains in the budget, the budget bill has now passed first reading. So leading me to ask, and we're going to go back on Justin Trudeau in a minute here, but suddenly Mark Carney has made an appearance in public to talk about how the budget is actually bad for Canadians and nothing in Ottawa happens by accident. I think we've all learned that by now. So interesting that when there's talk about Justin Trudeau's leadership, that suddenly Mark Carney is making his voice public and, well, taking sides with most Canadians that this is a bad budget. Interesting.
Yeah. I think we can safely assume that Mark Carney will be throwing his hat in the ring as soon as there's some rumblings of a liberal leadership race. I mean, this kind of solidifies that.
Yeah, exactly. And Warren Kinsella and others, but it was Warren Kinsella where I had read it first, has said that, quote unquote, sources say that Justin Trudeau will not lead the Liberals into the next federal election. I can't see any scenario where that's actually true, but it does explain Mark Carney. It does explain Sean Fraser having his fundraiser in Calgary, which we talked about quite a while ago. It does explain a lot of other dealings going on. So I guess that's possible.
Yeah, I would tend to believe Warren Kinsella in this. I mean, he is a liberal insider. He is not really an insider in the current party,
Right.
but he certainly knows a lot of people who are. So I would tend to believe him when he says Trudeau won't be running in the next election.
Well, you never know. Let
I
us go.
mean, there's like things like Mark Carney coming out and speaking in public about this, about Sean Fraser, holding fundraising. That kind of stuff says to me that it's true. Whether Justin Trudeau will be the will whether it's going to be his choice or not is the question. But I think that there's too many little things like this happening that say to me that he won't be the leader. If the election is held when it's supposed to be, in a year and a half or whatever, right? It's fall of 2025. If the election doesn't happen until then, I think I would tend to believe that Trudeau won't be the leader, because by then, I mean, they might only have like 10 or 12% support.
Yeah, well, and the idea of him being pushed out as and you're right, Warren Kinsella definitely knows stuff that we don't. And it sort of makes other things add up, like the Sean Fraser, like Mark Carney. Both Dominic LeBlanc and Chrystia Freeland have been asked directly, would you be interested in the job? And they, well,
Christia Freeland said yes.
yeah, and Dominic LeBlanc, he was coy about it. I mean, he said, oh, I support the Prime Minister, blah, 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 but at the same time, it was like, well, I would certainly be happy to, serve in whatever capacity, whatever. He was really very coy and politically correct about it, but he basically said, yeah, he'd do it. So.
Yeah. And I mean, like, Christia Freeland is one of the most unlikable politicians in the country. She's also, probably the worst politician in Canada when she's not on script. Like, she's actually worse than Trudeau. Like, Trudeau, when he's off script, there's a lot of a lot of uhs, a lot of water, paper water box, thingies, right? Those kinds of answers where don't make any sense, and you can tell that he's panicking because he can't think of an answer. There's a lot of that with Chrystia Freeland. When she is off script and she's asked a question she doesn't know the answer to, well, we would like to engage with Canadians. That's how she answers, and I'm not exaggerating. That's exactly what it sounds like. And so she's like, I mean, you've seen her when she's on with Vashi Kapelos, and Vashi is just like, you can tell, like, Vashi's falling asleep between words. Like, it takes so long for her to answer a question, and Vashi just has enough and just go, okay, well, let's move on to something else, because you obviously don't know what you're talking about here. But she's worse than Kamala Harris. When Kamala Harris gets off script, she is really bad too, right? In the States. But Chrystia Freeland is even worse. Like, it's unbelievable that someone who, I'm gonna just come out right out say it here, someone who is as dumb as Chrystia Freeland has gotten this high in government. Like, she is number two in command of the government, and she is as dumb as they come.
Yep, and her condescending style of speaking is not going to endear anybody to her. So there's
No.
that. And now I've seen, I follow some good parody accounts. Justin Trudeau's ego is one, Jagmeet
Oh, that's
Singh's
a good one.
hypocrisy is another one. And of
Yeah.
course, the king of them all, Stephen Guilbeault, Minister of Environment parody.
Yeah.
And one of those accounts was calling Chrystia Freeland's debt is another one. It's not as good as the others, but one of those, I think it was Justin Trudeau's ego, had said, I sent out Chrystia Freeland, Minister of Twitching. And I was like,
Yeah.
no, maybe that was Stephen Guilbeault's. Yeah, that was Stephen Guilbeault's parody, called her Minister of Twitching. And I was like, that's good. That is good.
Yeah.
So, I actually would like to see her become the next leader, because the party would get absolutely decimated if she did.
Oh, yeah. I mean, could you imagine a debate with her in it? I mean, that would be the most uncomfortable thing I think I'll ever watch is her in a debate.
Yeah, oh, for sure. So we'll wrap this up by saying the only glimmers of hope that I have for my election dream to come true, and I've already, settled that it's not going to. But Elections Canada, for some reason, announced on Friday that they are currently printing mail-in ballots for Canadian for handicapped Canadians for the next election. And I thought, how can you be printing ballots now if you don't know who's going to be on them? So I just thought that was a little odd that they would be making that announcement now.
Why would they be printing them now? There's not supposed to be an election for more than a year.
Well, and see, I kind of thought, because the punditry class is so in lockstep by pointing out almost daily, well, we're a year and a half away from an election. Well, we're a year and a half away. Well, we're not going to see an election for a year and a half, so that they can set themselves up perfectly for when the snap election comes, going, oh, wow, well, we never saw that coming. I was like, well, yeah, but that dumb hillbilly in Saskatoon did, so why didn't you? But I might just be that dumb hillbilly in Saskatoon, because apparently there's no election coming.
Yeah.
But the last point I'll make is, Pierre Poilievre has put on his social media videos, photos, etc., of him out door knocking with candidates. Hamilton Stoney Creek on Friday, a Toronto riding yesterday, and they had their national day of canvassing a few weekends ago for the Conservative Party. So I just thought, that made me think, how are we not in election mode when they're out actually door knocking and getting ready for a campaign that we haven't seen yet?
Yeah, no, it's I don't know. I mean, when you're in the official opposition, I mean, in a minority government like this, I think you got to be prepared at all times
Oh, maybe that's what it is.
for a possible election.
Yeah.
But I mean, we've been told by people who have asked Pierre Poilievre directly if an election is going to be happening this year, and he told them absolutely not,
Yeah.
like no chance in hell, basically. So I don't know. I mean, they usually, my experience talking to politicians in this country is that they actually know a lot more than they let out to the public. They'll say things to the media, or they'll say things out in public about, how they want that election right now, and yada yada yada. And they're, but behind closed doors, they actually know that there's no election happening, because they talk to people in the other parties on a regular basis.
Yeah.
It's not like just so our listeners know, like these politicians are not like, they don't hate each other. Like, I mean, Poilievre and Trudeau might hate each other, and I think that hate might be actually quite real.
It seems like it is, yeah.
Yeah, but But a lot of these MPs, like they hobnob with each other from different parties, and they go to dinner together, and they have drinks together and all this, and I mean they talk about a lot of stuff like that they don't let the general public know. Like they actually know, if the other party's preparing for an election, if they're doing all these things, because they talk about these things behind closed doors. So to have someone like to have someone tell us that Pierre Poilievre told them there's absolutely no way an election is happening this year, I think I might have to believe him.
Yeah, I mean, and Justin Trudeau, I guess thanks to Max Valiquette. Not that I'd know because I'm still blocked from following Max Valiquette, communications director for Justin Trudeau. You?
As am I.
Okay. Justin Trudeau has appeared on some US podcasts talking about how nothing's his fault and Canadians just are getting fed misinformation and we just need to see the light that what he's doing is in our best interest. And well, he's pretty much won the next election by his publicity stunt yesterday, Lewis. Wasn't that one brilliant?
Yeah, it was so for those of you who haven't seen it, it's a well-produced little 60-second video of him sitting in his office at the Prime Minister's office, right? Sitting at his desk, and he gets a video call. And he answers the call, and it is Hayden Christensen, the famously bad actor that played Anakin Skywalker in Star Wars. And he's talking to him like he's their long lost buddies. And Hayden asks how's it going? And he says, "Hey, I told the kids they better be binging Star Wars all day today, because for those of you who don't know, May 4th is Star Wars Day. It's May the 4th be with you." And trust me, I hate it because it's my birthday, and I hate hearing that all the time. And a lot because I'm a Star Trek guy more than a Star Wars guy. But anyway, and after this video call's over, because Trudeau says that he's packing up, he's got to hit the road, and he picks up his briefcase, puts it on his desk, and opens it up, and you see that there's a lightsaber in his briefcase. And you know what? He's trying to suggest that he's a Jedi. But he was just hobnobbing with Hayden Christensen, who played Anakin Skywalker, who, if you know Star Trek or Star Wars lore, he becomes Darth Vader, who is a Sith Lord. It was an evil Jedi. And I think without him knowing it, he just revealed to Canadians that he's actually a Sith Lord and he's evil.
Which we knew all along, but now he's just advertising for us.
Yeah. So, but we did a little digging. So, Tony, tell us, how much does Hayden Christensen charge for a short little cameo like that?
So if you wish to book Hayden Christensen for a greeting, which is probably the lowest level of what these entertainers do, and these are US figures. You will be paying anywhere between $75,000 to $150,000 for a 1 minute call with Hayden Christensen. I hope to hell you and I did not pay that money.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully they used Liberal Party dollars for this. In fact, that's what it should have been, because there was no promoting of Canadian government. It was all about Trudeau. So it should have been Liberal Party funds paying for this. But as we know from this party and this government, there's a good chance that they used public dollars for it.
Very likely. Yep.
So we'll look into it a little more to see, but right now, I mean, we know it should have been Liberal money, used for it, not taxpayer dollars. So, but we'll do some digging and see what we can find out.
You bet. And well, that's a good segue into our next segment because it's kind of a wacko phone call. Well, let's talk about the word wacko. Because, wow, Pierre Poilievre, how dare he say the word wacko, referring to a wacko policy from a wacko prime minister. And for that, he got kicked out of the House of Commons. Wait, what?
He got kicked out of the House of Commons, and the entire conservative caucus stood up and walked out with him. Now, you may be thinking, yeah, it's partisan. He shouldn't have called the prime minister wacko and all of that. And, maybe not. But it isn't as partisan as you think that there are calls for the Speaker of the House to step down over this. If you think, and I don't blame you for thinking this is a partisan issue, the conservatives are all calling for him to step down because he's a lousy speaker and he's, obviously biased towards the liberals and yada, yada, yada. I can understand you thinking that. But the conservatives aren't the only ones calling for his resignation over this. NDPers are calling for his resignation. Tom Mulcair, former liberal, or sorry, former NDP leader, is calling for the resignation of the Speaker of the House to step down over this. He really overstepped his authority to kick the leader of the official opposition out of the House for this. And you've got people from multiple parties saying that he should be stepping down over this, and I fully agree.
Well, and he's even got some media pundits saying the same thing. I guess Tom Mulcair is now a media pundit as well. But Tom Mulcair was visibly angry when he was first asked about this. And he said that, Greg Fergus is being too partisan. He needs to step down. And I agree. Greg Fergus has been a horrible speaker. I mean, we talked about on the show that shortly after becoming speaker, when, well, there the, he was there was
Who's in Washington, D.C.?
Washington, that's what I'm trying to think of. It was Young Liberals convention in Washington, D.C., where he went, as the Speaker of the House. There was the video for the outgoing Ontario Liberal leader, which he delivered in his Speaker's robe from the office of the Speaker. And he sees nothing wrong with this stuff. And there's been more. I mean, he's a personal friend of Justin Trudeau. And he is letting that, obviously affect his duties. Now, the wacko thing, after Pierre Poilievre made his remarks, Greg Fergus said he wanted him to withdraw. So Pierre Poilievre said, I withdraw and replace it with the word extremist. And then he said, no, I need you to withdraw. He said, okay, well, I'll replace it with the word radical. And nope, that wasn't good enough. So Greg Fergus kicked him out. And
Yeah,
so,
and this came just shortly after Prime Minister Trudeau called Pierre Poilievre spineless.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, Justin Trudeau had talked about Pierre Poilievre and his support from extremists and white supremacists, and then called it spineless leadership. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and was not reprimanded over that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. So, because we're here for you, we did do a little bit of digging, and actually thank Andrew Lawton had posted that Peter Julian, who's the NDP House leader, was actually speaking up and saying that, oh, hey, wacko was unparliamentary, etc. Well, Peter Julian actually has used the word wacko 4 times in committee and in the House of Commons. And Peter Julian was never ejected for using the word wacko when talking about wacko conservatives and wacko conservative policies.
Interesting.
Yeah, I kind of thought that too. And then we can go back to February, well, actually February 6th, as a matter of fact, when Arif Virani, who was not then but is now the justice minister, actually called Pierre Poilievre quote effing tool. He didn't say effing, he used the whole word. And yes, he did withdraw the remark, but he was not asked to leave for calling Pierre Poilievre directly an effing tool. And let's go back to 2014, back when Justin Trudeau was opposition leader,
I knew you were going to bring this up.
calling conservative Peter Kent a quote piece of poop, but he did not use the word poop in the House of Commons. But oh no, he withdrew the remark, so it's okay. No ejection there. And then, of course, when he happened to smack Ruth Ellen Brosseau with his elbow and happened to catch her in the breast on the House floor because he wanted to drag somebody back to their seats for a vote. Not
Who
only.
happened to be a conservative, wasn't even one of his own party members.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, good to point that out. Yeah, and no admonishment whatsoever there. But how dare Pierre Poilievre use the word wacko?
Yeah, and this was, I believe, shortly after Rachel, oh,
Thomas.
what's her last name?
Thomas.
Thomas, Rachel Thomas, used to be Rachel Harder. Rachel Thomas was kicked out of the House of Commons herself for using unparliamentary language, which she did retract. And she said, it was very smart the way she did it too. She said, I believe that the speaker is acting in an unparliamentary way, and I retract that comment. And he, or no, I retract.
I
I said,
withdraw.
I withdraw. I withdraw is the words that she used, which is the words you're supposed to use when you withdraw a comment. The speaker then proceeded to kick her out of the house. Now, the House of Commons has two printed records of what is said in the House of Commons. One is called the Blues, and it's called the Blues because it used to be, not anymore, but it used to be printed on blue paper. And it was a direct word-for-word transcript of what took place in the House of Commons that day. And the other is the Hansard. And the Hansard is the official record of what was said in the House of Commons that day. And it's the blues that gets transcribed into the Hansard. And every MP gets a blues copy of what was said, of what they said in the House of Commons that day, where they can actually look and make sure that everything is exactly what they said, that it's correct. That if they want to make an edit to the wording of something they said, they can request an edit as long as it does not change the meaning of what was said, and it just changes the readability of it, makes it easier to read or something. Because they might have said and that's recorded, and so they might request that that gets removed just to make what was said more readable. The Hansard is the official transcript. Like, that's once it's in the Hansard, it can never be changed. Well, she noticed that her words, I withdraw, were omitted in the Hansard, and she didn't request them to be omitted. And so the speaker, I believe, is the only person who can request things to be omitted going into the Hansard. If an MP has not requested it, the speaker can. And so this was re this her words, I withdraw, were not put into the official transcript. And so it appears as though the speaker has edited what was actually said in the House of Commons to make his ruling look justified. This is really bad for the speaker.
And she wasn't afraid to point that out. There's a video of her in the House of Commons, and thankfully you sent it to me because I actually didn't know much about this until yesterday. I knew that it had happened, but when you watch the video, she goes through all the parliamentary procedures and rulings and guidelines that the speaker himself has to abide by to say that, yeah, you shouldn't have done this. You had no right to do this. You have changed the meaning of what I said by omitting those two words. And she essentially said he's in contempt of parliament, and I don't disagree with her.
Yeah. I mean, this is frankly, there has not been enough media coverage of this. The whole incident with Pierre Poilievre being kicked out has got most of, if not almost all of, the media attention. This is far worse. Like this incident is far worse than what happened to Pierre Poilievre. And frankly, I think Pierre Poilievre should be talking about it more too, because this is a really, really over like a real overreach of power, and it's actually it's corruption.
Yeah, that's good. That's exactly what it is. He's covering his own ass for his own partisan leanings. Again, we're talking about him being partisan. He's actually covering up his own mistake, because he should not have ejected her from the house because she, withdrew the comment she made, but he kicked her out anyway because he doesn't like conservatives.
Yeah, no,
Flat
this
out.
is, yeah, and I mean, I just don't think the media is giving this enough coverage, or any coverage. I'd be interested to see how it's dealt with on today's political shows, because Sunday is kind of the big day for political punditry in this country. So we'll see how it's dealt with today. But yeah, I'm really disappointed. Actually, in how people in the media are not seeing this for the problem that it is, because this is a really, really big problem.
Yeah, I mean, he needs to go. That's really all it is. He just needs to go. He needs to go now. So, all right. Now, Canada, I know you've been waiting, and we're sorry to keep you waiting. Let's talk about BC, because everybody needs to know the insanity, but this time it's not even BC's insanity. We talked about last week, Premier David Eby, and only because of the polling numbers of the BC Conservatives did he say, hey, we need to tweak this decriminalization of drugs thing so we can recriminalize public use of illicit drugs. And Justin Trudeau said, no, we're not going to do it.
Well, I don't think he's turned it down yet.
Well, no, I guess not. Like Yara Saxe, who nobody knows, but is the Minister of Addictions, more famous for saying that honk honk at the Freedom Convoy actually means Heil Hitler. That's I
Oh,
think she
that's her.
that that
Okay.
that that's her. Yes, she's the Jewish member of Parliament who didn't speak out against Hamas protesters blocking a bridge in Toronto leading into her Jewish neighborhood for some reason. But
Yeah.
anyway, she has come out and said, well, we're only 1 year into a 3-year pilot project. We don't yet have enough data. It's like, I think you do. 22 Canadians die every day from illicit drug overdose. Six of those are in BC. Now, BC has roughly 12% of the national population, but 22% of the overdose deaths. Do you not see a problem here, Miss Sachs?
Yeah, and the BC government is asking for it to be recriminalized, like the public use of drugs. They're asking for it to be recriminalized. The people of BC are asking for it to be recriminalized. We're begging for it. And they're like, nah, we know what's better for you than you know what's good for you. It's arrogance, and it's I don't know, it might be vindictiveness too. It might be, you're your province has is not supporting us anymore, so why should we support them, right? Like that's how it feels. It's and I wouldn't put it past them because they've got a child as a leader, and it's a childish response. I mean, frankly, it just is. I mean, we're begging for the government to recriminalize at least the public use of drugs, if not recriminalize all those hard drugs that they decriminalized. And they're just like shrugging it off. Eh, we need more data. I don't think you do. You just need to come here. You just need to come here and see what's happening with your own eyes. Because I can tell you, like, my daughter right now has been over in Europe backpacking. She has been there for 5 weeks. She has got 3.5 weeks left on her trip. And in those 5 weeks that she's been gone, my little town here now has six times the homeless population it had when she left.
Yeah, well, there's one telling sign. Now, and don't forget, last year, remember, BC set a record 2,511 overdose deaths. There was one talking head, and I can't remember who it was, who had said that, oh, well, there's no evidence that the safe supply drugs are making its way onto the illicit drug market. And I thought, you need to watch Canada is Dying, because Aaron Gunn actually interviewed people who said flat out, yes, we take these Dilaudid pills, we sell them on the streets, and well, I know we can get $25 a pill in Saskatchewan, and we get however much it was on in other parts of the country. So yeah, they have people actually running these pills out of province. So
Yeah. Well,
do you
wasn't
get
it when they did didn't they say like 50% of the drugs that are recovered during a drug bust in BC are the Dilaudid pills, the
the safe
government,
supply?
yeah,
Yeah.
the government safe supply drugs that they give for free to people who live on the street. Like 50% of the drugs that are confiscated during drug busts, that's what they are. Because
Yeah.
they're not, because people are, they're getting them, they're going onto the street and immediately selling them so that they can buy fentanyl with the money that they make from those drugs.
Yeah, so like, how much data do you need? Andrew Scheer, and I know I've said this before, I'm going to say it again. Andrew Scheer now is the leader he should have been when he was actually the leader of the Conservative Party.
Agreed.
He's House leader now for the Conservatives. He let Chrystia Freeland have it in the House of Commons, and all he was asking was, give us a date when British Columbians can will no longer be allowed to shoot up drugs in BC hospitals. And of course, Chrystia Freeland could not answer the question. I recognize there's a problem, but we support Canadians, yada, yada, yada. And Andrew Scheer was like, just give us a date. And of course, she wouldn't answer, but I just thought, where was this Andrew Scheer in 2019? We wouldn't have this problem.
Yeah. No, exactly. Andrew Scheer is since he, stepped down as leader, has been like great. I mean, we've said this on the show many, many times that we're like, where the hell was this guy when he was the leader? Where the hell was this guy?
So to wrap this up, what did we say on the show?
Consequences.
Elections have consequences. Just so you know, Ontario, that the city of Toronto has actually applied for the same current exemption on drug use in public that BC is trying to get rid of.
Yeah. So
Thank you.
let that sink in.
Thank you, Chairman Chow.
Yeah.
All right. And in the next edition of Elections Have Consequences, the city of Calgary, I don't know if they're trying to be as insane as BC and Toronto just to get in the news more, but whatever Jody Gondek's doing, it's working. She's certainly more talked about now than she's ever been. The mayor and council of Calgary have voted yes to a motion to allow non citizens to vote in municipal elections in Calgary. Thankfully, the province has to sign off on that, and obviously they won't. But how much hubris does Jody Gondek and that council have to, I guess, essentially change the constitution to say, yeah, you know what? Even if you're not a Canadian citizen, we want you to choose who the government is. Hard pass.
Yeah, there's privileges that you get when you're a citizen of a country. And one of those privileges is voting. And it's one of the things that you keep from non-citizens as a incentive to become a citizen. Citizen or non-citizens don't have a dog in the game unless they become a citizen. And I mean, I just don't understand why you would want people who don't have, they could just go back to wherever they came from. If things get really bad here, they don't have to worry about the consequences. And like we just said, elections have consequences, right? So, but when you're a citizen, you have privileges that you don't have as a non-citizen, and to me, voting is that one privilege that nobody should have unless they are a citizen.
Yep, absolutely. I've actually met people who become Canadian citizens, and how amazingly proud they are to stand in line to vote
Yeah.
is well, it's encouraging to say the least. I mean,
Yeah.
it's so awesome to see. And so if
We
you
already have a problem. We already have a problem with people coming to this country and not becoming citizens. Like it's actually a growing problem. Because the numbers, the percentage of immigrants coming to Canada do not become citizens, that never become citizens, is going up every year. Like it used to be that when people came to Canada, they tried to become citizens as soon as possible. As soon as the law allowed, they became citizens, and it was a really high percentage. It's actually quite low now, the percentage of immigrants becoming Canadian citizens. It's actually quite low. So this is a problem, and by giving them more privileges that only citizens are entitled to at the moment is not the way to combat that.
nope, it definitely isn't. Yeah, it cheapens citizenship by saying, "Oh yeah, well yeah, you don't have to be a citizen. Just go ahead and vote for Jody." No.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's like this Jody Gondek, it's like she is gleeful at the idea that there might be a disaster of some kind that she can, be the hero of the day. And this is kind of one of those things where she is wanting to be the hero for somebody, and now like she's trying to be the hero for non-citizens, you know what I mean? Like it's like she's trying to find a cause to be the champion of, and she just can't find the right one.
Yeah, well, I think she realizes she's not going to get elected again unless she can find that cause where she can rally the citizens behind her. Oh, did I say citizens? Whoops. But I think she's done. I don't even know when the next municipal election is in Calgary, but I don't think she's got a hope in winning. I mean, she continues to step on landmine after landmine,
I
and
mean, this might be like the quickest I've ever seen a mayor like go from 100 to zero. Like it's like the probably the fastest I've ever seen it happen.
yeah. Oh, excuse me. So, anyway, enough insanity from Calgary. So, why don't we talk a little hockey to wrap it up? Because that's
Yeah, she's
playoff.
only been mayor for 3 years.
Okay, so you've got another year to go.
Yeah.
Okay, well, buckle up, Calgary.
Yeah.
Okay, so. Throughout the playoffs, we're gonna wrap the show up talking hockey, and I love the first round. I mean, I'm old enough to remember a 21 team league where the first round was the top team played number 16, and it's then you went from there, and there was always at least one big upset. And now it's not as skewed that way because you've got the division format, so you don't see the big upsets until later on in the contest. But it's still been great. The first round, we've seen a sweep. We've seen some 5-game series, a 6-game series, a game seven last night, another game seven tonight. It's this is what I love about the playoffs. It you never actually know what's going to happen in the first round, and it was an exciting game last night. Obviously, the Leafs didn't get it done, but I mean, you've seen the Oilers turn it on like they could have all season and have. And I mean, the Canucks are looking good. Florida absolutely, blew away the
Lightning.
Lightning, sorry.
Yeah.
And the Rangers, did the sweep with Washington. It's been great. I can't wait for the second round.
Yeah. And the game seven last night, I mean, went to overtime. So, I mean, it's, you can't ask for more than, well, I mean, if you're a Leafs fan, you could.
I know we just isolated half our audience, but
But I mean, now, I mean, come the second round here, I mean, I'm in a bit of a pickle because I mean, this is the matchup I was least looking forward to, with Vancouver and Edmonton facing each other, because they're my like number 1A and 1B team, because it's just I'm a BC boy, and so the Canucks were always my number one because I'm from BC, and I grew up in the era of Trevor Linden and Cliff Ronning and Jeff Cortnell and Captain Kirk, and Pavel Bure and Gino Ogic and all those great Canucks. And then but when I was growing up, Gretzky was my favorite player, and so I loved the Oilers too. And when I moved out of my parents' house when I was 20 years old or 19 years old, 19 years old, you don't hear that anymore. People moving out when they're 19.
yeah.
When I moved out of my parents' house at 19, I moved to Edmonton. I lived there for 5 years. I went to tons of games. Buddy of mine won season tickets 1 year, so I mean, we went to a lot of games that year. I was at the longest game in Oilers history when I went to triple overtime in the I think it was 98 playoffs when they played Dallas, and it went to triple overtime with Brett Hull scoring with like a minute and 12 seconds left in the third overtime period to end it for the Oilers that year. But so I've just been a huge Oilers fan for a long time, and having gone to a lot of games there and everything when I was in my early 20s, it was you can't stop being an Oilers fan once you're an Oilers fan. And so yeah, this is going to be a tough second round for me. I don't even, I'll be cheering every goal and lamenting every goal. So, yeah, it should be fun. But I mean, Toronto doesn't have to worry about that. So.
Well, I mean, at least you know that one of your teams will be in the third round.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. One Canadian team is guaranteed to be in the third round of the playoffs. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm sad that the Jets are out, but I mean, now that they are, I definitely will like to see the Oilers win. So, I guess I'll support one of your teams, just not
Yeah. Well, it's
the
funny because if you think about it, all the Canadian teams that made the playoffs this year, their primary color is blue.
other. So, well,
Yeah,
that's a good
and
point.
but yeah, no, it's gonna be, I don't even know why I brought that up, but anyway, I just thought it was an interesting fact. But
It is.
But yeah, I mean, it's this next round is going to be pretty good. I mean, the Edmonton Vancouver series is going to be, I don't even want to even try to consider who might win that one, but because Vancouver's goaltending has just been unreal. I mean, three different goalies started in the first round for Vancouver, and they all played amazing. Even this Shylov's, I can never pronounce that kid's name right, but he's from Belarus, and it's like he's a rookie, and he played like a 15-year veteran. Like, he was unreal. If Skinner can keep stopping pucks the way he did in the first round, Edmonton just might be unstoppable. Because Skinner was the Achilles heel for the Oilers last year, but this year he has been rock solid. The other series in the West is it Dallas?
We don't know yet. We'll know
Oh, that's the
it
game seven
tonight.
tonight. That's right. That's the game seven tonight. Right. Okay. I'm calling Dallas in that series. I'm hoping, at least I'm hoping, it's going to be Dallas. And in the East, it's the Rangers and
Carolina.
is it Rangers and Carolina? So that'll be good, but I'm calling the Rangers in that series too.
Oh, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and
That's
then sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say Carolina's got some firepower, but I just don't think that they're gonna be able to keep up with the Rangers. So,
No, and then you've got Florida and Boston in the other series. And sorry, Florida, but I think Boston's going to take this one.
probably, yeah. So,
Yeah.
and I do
So.
want to plug the Canadian Hockey League because in the WHL. Our own Saskatoon Blades are actually in the East final against the Moose Jaw Warriors, and that might go 7 games. Right now, it was actually funny. Our waitress last night at the brew house said, "Yeah, there's actually a bunch of the Saskatoon Blades billet parents and parents who were had booked the upstairs lounge because they kind of thought the Blades would have put it away on their last game, but then Moose Jaw tied the series up. So it's like, so they're all here now, but hopefully Tuesday they'll if there's a game seven, it'll be Tuesday, and then it'll be here so I can go." I was like, well, so I thought, well, hopefully they can get it done. There was actually a point in the regular season where the Saskatoon Blades had the best record in all of the CHL. So they've had a really good season, and well, East final, so all they got to do is put this one away, and they'll be in the WHL final. So if you're not into the NHL, check out some CHL because the Ontario Hockey League, I'm sure, and the Q are probably in their playoff mode as well.
Yeah, no, WHL is great hockey. I grew up watching the Kamloops Blazers back when Jerome Iginla was on the team. And that during his stint there, it was Jerome Iginla and there was another player named Nat Domichelli. And they were line mates and they were unstoppable together. Unfortunately, Nat Domichelli, when he made it to the NHL, he wasn't on the same team as Jerome Iginla. And he just didn't produce and didn't have much of a career in the NHL. But in the WHL, the two of them were just unstoppable. They played together. And I think they won three Memorial Cups together.
Oh,
So
wow.
yeah. Oh, and I forgot to talk about the Avalanche in the West. Like
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
we're waiting to find out who they're going to be playing, obviously, tonight. I think that whoever they're playing, and they're going to be in tough against because Dallas is really strong, and so is Vegas. But I still think that whoever is playing against the Avalanche is probably just going to get overpowered.
Well, I mean, I always wonder about that because the Avalanche have had, a bit of a break because obviously they put Winnipeg away in 5 games. So sometimes the rest will hurt you and sometimes it will help you. And being that they finished the first round, being they don't really need the rest necessarily. So I wonder. I mean, I mean, even like I suppose even if it does affect them in a negative way, that'll just be game one. And then they can turn it on in after that anyway. So,
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
all right. So we're gonna wrap it up there, Canada. So thank you so much for joining us. And until next week, it is Tony in Saskatchewan.
And Lewis out here in BC. Good night.
Good night.
This is Canadian Common Sense with Lewis and Tony.